Okay, this is Barbara Leonard, and I'm with Inner Garden. We're going to have absolutely fun and learning session with Reverend Jeannie Martin, who's going to be my guest today. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, Barbara. Thank you for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to this entire time together.
Yeah, this is going to be really a lot of fun. We haven't been doing this portion for that long, but we were on, when we first came on, we came on as a chapel online, which you well know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a station we came on with. We decided we'd come back and have every other week we would come on and talk to the people and see if we can get them interested in some of the things that we're doing and maybe bring some interesting things to them. So let's talk about you, Jeannie. You're an ordained minister, which I know because you and I were ordained together.
Yes.
You're also a certified hypnotherapist, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And now teaching hypnotherapy through the school that taught me, the Coastal Academy of Hypnotic Sciences, Arts and Sciences.
Good. And that's in Surrey, BC?
Surrey, by Guildford.
Yeah, very good. And for people that don't know where Surrey, BC is, that's in Canada. On the West Coast. And
yeah.
We're quite proud of Surrey. We tell soggy, sometimes sunny Surrey, but we love it out here. So, Jeannie, the classes that you took with hypnotherapy, we'll say that you, before that, you were an ordained minister. You were doing spiritual counseling, spiritual facilitation, which is mediumship.
Yes.
And how did the hypnotherapy actually help you with your work now?
Well, it seemed to me that right from the very beginning, I've had a passion for the unseen. And then that's led me along through my life to those things that you have mentioned. But it's always been a fascination for me, how the mind interacts with the world and creates our reality. So it was a natural thing for me to sort of come into that area where I felt that I could get a deeper understanding of how our minds create our reality and how we might be able to, for lack of better terminology, reprogram some of those things that are holding us back from our highest and our best. And I found that learning to be a clinical hypnotherapist certainly did that and more. It's fascinating. It's wonderful work.
It is, and it's very gratifying because a lot of times, as you well know, I've done hypnotherapy since 1976 and was certified here many years ago. But I find that it's really gratifying because sometimes people come into you and they are just actually basket case. And they just don't know which way to turn. And sometimes you can just sit with them for a few minutes and it just seems to turn the whole thing around and they start going the complete different direction and looking at what's happened in their life in a complete different way.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute that happens, at which you know and I know, then we take a different attitude and it's not so much what happens to it, so how we receive what happens to us or perceive it.
Mm-hmm. And my life in this type of work all the way along, and particularly with that idea of the spirituality of life, and I'm not speaking of religion per se here, I'm speaking about the spirit that's within us that is having this journey. The further that you take the time to go within and really see who you are, that power starts to emerge, and things become transformed. And our subconscious mind, as you know, is like an organic computer. It is storing every little bit of information it always has. So sometimes it gets jammed up and needs to be updated like the Adobe Flash Player. and so gently and so easily because it's done within your own mind.
Yeah. We have people that are listening online, so I'm going to give them a phone number that if they want to phone in and talk to us, it's 1-888-815-9756. It's a toll-free number from Canada to that number, and anywhere in the States as well. And if you'd like to phone in and just talk to Jeannie and find out a little bit about how this can help you in everyday workaday world, you might find that you're quite interested in what the mind can actually perceive in a different way and make your life a lot better. So anyway, Jeannie, you started working in it, and now you've been, how long have you been working full-time in this now?
Going into my fifth year now.
Yeah.
So it was something that came along later in life, but the timing was perfect.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's exactly what we're talking about, the goddessence of how the plan works.
Right.
Things come on your pathway when you're ready for them and when you're prepared for them. And you have the opportunity to take that offer that's on the pathway. If you're not prepared for to make a change, then you basically don't take that offer that's on the pathway. And it seems like, oh, people say, oh, you're either lucky or you're unlucky. It really has to do with preparation and taking opportunity as it comes. And that's what you did.
Sure, and taking responsibility, you know, as you go. Every moment's a new moment, and it's okay to take hold of the steering wheel once again and just steer the ship of our lives, you know?
Yeah. It's actually what I was talking to somebody at a supper tonight, because I went out for supper. I actually been out for lunch and supper today. That's not such a good idea for the new year's revolution about eating more properly. But when we were out and we were talking at dinner, I was explaining that a lot of times it's not so much what happens to you, but you can change your perception of how you receive what happened to you and use that, and that can be done a lot through hypnotherapy.
Absolutely, I totally agree, and that really is at the core of it, how our perception can be changed. Because a lot of things that we come up with as beliefs, really, we adopted them way back at a time when we were perceiving things from the mind of a child,
mm-hmm.
or as a growing adult. And, you know, it's like you need to keep the river flowing. But as you know, too, we're creatures of habit, and we kind of like to, we have a tendency to hold on to the things that seem the same, even if they're not serving us so well.
Well, you know, when I wrote the book, Don't Stand There Sucking Your Thumb, because you have some plums on your fingertips. When I wrote that book, in one part of it there, I said even in your most negative situation, people will stay in that situation as long as it's serving them.
I agree.
It may be serving them in a negative way, and they just can't seem to move out of it unless they change their perception of what's going on, what has happened, and how they're going to use the past as tools, because even God can't change our past.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we have a term in hypnotherapy called secondary gain.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time we're not really aware of the fact that that's why we're holding on to things, because if we change something, then everything else has to change around it, and that's the part that we're, you know, kind of maybe holding back from embracing.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that life has to change.
You see that a lot in when you're working with habit control, you know, for people to change the habits and change their life. And this is what they say with alcoholism. It's when you perceive that you have an alcohol problem when you have to do something about it.
Right.
And as long as the alcohol is serving you and you don't face that it's a problem, then you basically will stay there.
You're absolutely right. And then tied together with that are the behaviors around it. So if you're working with an addiction that you're trying to walk past, then don't drive down the same street where the pub is that you've always driven.
Exactly.
You know, you need to change other things as well, and it does take effort. And and that's okay.
Yeah, you know that Einstein was a very smart man, and one of the things that he said is you cannot change a negative situation with the same mind that created it.
Absolutely.
And we do. We do the same thing and expect a different result.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, I guess sometimes it's easier to see it out there somewhere than it is within ourselves.
Exactly.
And that as into the search of the mind, We really are. We're a gestalt of many belief systems and some thoughts that really don't even belong to us. We've picked them up along the way. So it'd be lovely if you could just go in inside and sweep it all out a little bit, clear it all up.
There's one fellow that talks on one of the knowledge networks, and he said that when you have a thought that is not, like, say, a thought that's not serving you, challenges the thought.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do that, do we? I mean, we'll get a thought, we'll work with that thought, we'll go along, say somebody says, oh, I'm stupid, I can't learn math, right?
Mm-hmm.
They basically can learn math. Anybody can learn if they take the time and it, well, shouldn't say anybody, but majority of people then, if given the time and energy to that application, they will learn if they start at square one and work away at it. They may not be a mathematician, but they can learn it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Yeah, and the same thing with playing a piano. You may not be a concert pianist, but everybody can learn to play the piano if you just follow the principles that are there.
Mm-hmm. An interesting the revelation with the mind is that within our mind, there's many parts. They're just like people.
Yeah.
You know, when I say to you, would you like to go for dinner on Friday night? And you might say to yourself, well, part of me really wants to go for dinner, but the other part thinks that I should stay home and clean the place up. Right there, there's two parts, and we've got lots of them.
Yeah.
So it I think is a good habit that everyone can do when, first of all, check into your mind, see where you're thinking. Check in two or three or four times a day and say, what am I thinking? And if it's going down a tube somewhere, then stop it right there and speak to the part that's mm-hmm. causing that to happen and say, no, I need you to help me in a different way.
You know, many years ago, there used to be a theory that was out, and you're probably too young to remember this, but when somebody would make a negative statement, there was kind of a habit of kind of putting your hand up and erasing it and say, cancel that thought.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people say, well, once a thought goes into the atmosphere, you can't cancel it. But what that actually does, though, I mean, when the thought goes out, yes, the energy's going out, but the minute that you say something negative, say I say something negative to you about somebody we both know.
Right.
Okay. And immediately I say, wait a minute, cancel that thought. That wasn't a very kind thing to say. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm doing basically is making my mind aware that it doesn't want to keep creating that thought.
Absolutely, and that's
and doesn't want to feed that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know you can't withdraw it, but, you know, I used to a lot of times say that to people who come into the office and they would seem to be into a very negative frame of mind. And I said, you know, every time that you say something like, I hate that, or that just drives me crazy, or something, it just out loud say, cancel that thought. Because what will happen is you start becoming aware how many times a day you're actually making negative statements.
Absolutely. And you're teaching your subconscious mind to accept that stuff as true.
Yeah.
And
so
that's why
you're doing is saying, hey, wait a minute, I'm mm-hmm. challenging that thought. Maybe that isn't really correct. Maybe I'm not so stupid that I can't learn anything. Or
and
you know, maybe people aren't always putting blocks in my way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And not doing negative self-talk. Don't talk down about yourself. Because you're programming a very strong message that just gets worse over time. We're perfect. We've got to remember that.
I kind of laughed. You know, Patricia is working as our
yes. Mm-hmm.
licensed minister, and she's going to be ordained mm-hmm. pretty quick. She's student minister. And she said that one time when she was in school, very many, many, many years ago, somebody said to her, teacher, I think it was, said to her, you have beautiful hair. I think it was her that told me this. Maybe not. She was going to phone in and say, I didn't tell you that. But somebody told me about it. And the person said, you have beautiful hair. And she started to kind of, oh, well, it's not so great type of thing. And the woman said, say thank you.
Right.
Just say thank you. And how many times has somebody give you a compliment and you kind of backpedal?
Yeah.
instead of accepting the comment by saying, well, thank you very much. I'm glad that you like what I'm wearing, or you like my hair, or, you know. Mm-hmm. And I find myself even doing that. You know, sometimes I'm not right on top of it right away when somebody says something. I have a hard time accepting a compliment. And that was something that was training as I was younger.
Yeah, and it's also, I sure hear what you're saying there. It's also when somebody tries to love you. You've got to let them love you, or they don't have the opportunity to love.
Yeah.
So when someone does say that, they're reaching out in love to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of the greatest things in our world of concepts, I think, is Mother Is. I play that game sometimes when I'm working with people, and I'll say, all right, I want you to take a piece of paper and put down Mother Is, and put everything down about what universally people think Mother Is. And you'll get Mother Self-Sacrificing, Mother Is always concerned about her children, and it'll be a whole line of, you know, wonderful things. And then you'll get one person whose mother wasn't exactly fitting that peg.
Right.
You know, like there's a hole that the peg's supposed to go into, and that person kind of has a little sharp corners on it. It doesn't go in the same hole as the universal mother. And all of a sudden, you'll find, if that's the case, that person goes through a great deal of problems trying to feel loved, because if mother didn't love me, I can't really show people who I am or be who I am, because there must be something about me that my mother didn't love me. And I find that's a hard one that we deal with when they come in.
Yes, I certainly agree with that. So much is, again, I'm going to use that awful word, programmed into us from in the mind of a child. And sometimes those things that have gone into our mind at very young ages are misinterpreted, for one thing.
Yeah.
Most mothers set out, I believe, to do the best they can with what they know.
And they do.
And they do. Yeah.
Yeah, no matter what. You know, this is, and I think you probably do the same thing with clients. This is the one thing I say, they do the very best they know how to do. If they knew better, they'd do better.
Yes.
But they don't know better. So what we're at a point that if something like that happens where your mother didn't fit that little slot that all the mothers fit in, and so immediately I find that the younger person, very young, and as they grow up, always feel there's got to be something short about them, something that's not measuring up if their mother didn't love them. So this is something that carries over. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you would just realize that they're human beings, they do the best that they know how to do. Maybe you don't condone what they did if it was a rough childhood, but you have to get to a point where you can forgive it. You don't need to condone it. You don't even need to put up with it. If it's in a continuant thing that's going on as you grow up, and the mother or the person who is created an abuse towards you continues to be that type of person, you don't have to be in that environment. But you do need to let go of it and forgive them so that you can get on, right?
Absolutely. And what we learn and find out to be very true is, in the formative years of life, no matter what backgrounds or upbringings each one of us has had, we now know that if you have a child in your world, particularly from the age 0 to 12, you are programming a brand spanking new computer, just as if you bought it off the counter at Staples.
Yeah,
so everything you say to that child is going in there as truth, because they don't have a critical mind to know the difference.
No.
So even if that child is not so-called living up to someone else's standards, tell that young child what a wonderful person they are. And pick out the things that, my gosh, you're great at art, and I love the way you laugh, and I'm sure glad to be visiting with you, anything.
Yeah.
Because this is, that's the key part of life that builds that foundation. So that years later, we're not trying to unravel our heads because we've become so stressed out over stuff that's built up over the years, you know?
Yeah.
But there's always today, and with hypnotherapy, it can be turned around so quickly, it's unbelievable. and painlessly and drug-free.
That's what I find, is that it's amazing how quickly that by just working with a hypnotherapist, they have to be willing. Just like somebody comes in and they say, well, I choose to become a non-smoker. I never use quitting smoking because I don't believe that. I choose to be a non-smoker. I want to become a non-smoker. So I say, okay, fine. But they have to really want to do that because all the help that we give them is going to go right down the tubes if they walk out of there and put a cigarette, in and start just smoking up a storm as soon as they get out the door. So, it has to be a commitment of, and put time, energy, and money into anything that they're doing.
Well, the biggest challenge that we face as hypnotherapists is this idea that we're going to turn someone into a chicken make them do things that they wouldn't normally do or divulge secrets that they may have deeply buried within themselves. And the truth of the matter is that cannot be done.
No. That's interesting because let's talk about the stage hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we take somebody, a lot of us have seen, the really top-notch people. And, it's not a fake. It's not a fake.
No,
but what happens is you've got 2,000 people in an auditorium and somebody is on stage who has an ability to lead people to where they want them to be. And they call for 20 people to come on the stage, 20 of the most extroverted people who aren't afraid to make a donkey out of themselves come on the stage. And then they do, which you understand, they do pre-suggestion to see whether and how suggestive the person is. And then they get rid of the ones that aren't following the instructions. And therefore, what they have is they've impressed the other ones to the point that they follow that. But they still won't do anything that they wouldn't do normally.
That's right. And everyone of them that's up there has gone up with the idea of, let's have some fun.
Yeah.
But if you took them past their moral limits or if you told them to do something that really they would never do, they would instantly pop out of hypnosis.
Snap right out.
And
I've tell people that, and so do you probably, when you first prepare them, that if I say anything that is not the way that you would like it to go, you are completely at ease to come out of this suggestive situation that I'm using here.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And when people come to hypnotherapy, usually they've tried a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah.
Because that fear of what they think it is holding them back when it's the most gentle process. And I have to say, and I can clearly say that 99% of everyone that's been to the office and experienced hypnosis absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
Because it's so
relaxing. It's certainly not scary.
Oh, no, it's just relaxing, deep, deep, deep relaxing.
And you come out of there feeling like you've had a sleep and a shower. You know,
sure
it's like
do.
Meditation, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I used to have classes for the parapsychology classes, and we would do a meditation. And I'd say to people, who here was just absolutely totally exhausted and almost didn't come to class, and you get 2/3 of the class put their hand up because they've been at work all day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd say, okay, let's do this meditation. And when they were finished that, they'd say, I felt like I had a shower and I've had a good night's sleep. That's exactly what happens when they go into hypnosis.
Yes,
however, here's something for you, Jeannie, that maybe you can address because I know that I've had this happen. A good friend of mine wanted to become a non-smoker, and he went to my mentor who taught me and had hypnosis. And he said to me, well, he didn't hypnotize me because I remembered everything he said and I was wide awake.
Well, the truth of the matter is, in hypnosis, you remember everything that was said.
Of course you do. to a degree, but if you tape it, this is what's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
If you tape it, and they replay the tape, they'll find because of the levels that we swing in and out of alpha state and beta state and back down almost into theta state during the time that's going on, that there'll be things that you say and they didn't hear it. Not consciously, they don't remember hearing it. And then they'll say, well, I guess I must have been somewhere. I don't remember that being said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are ways, of course, with hypnotherapy that we as the therapists know exactly where they're at in terms of levels of hypnosis.
Exactly.
That can be done through testing or being hooked up to a biofeedback machine.
Exactly.
And really, just the objective is to be able to get the conscious mind, that wonderful mind that keeps us from getting run over in traffic and balances the bank account and saves our physical body. We want that mind to step aside for a moment so that we can speak directly to the master, which is that subconscious, amazing library of wisdom.
Now, in that subconscious area, this is where we use the hypnotherapy and direct the people, because we don't hypnotize them. We direct them to hypnotize themselves.
Yep.
Yeah. But in that level of consciousness, which is basically the alpha state, talk a little bit about what happens in there when we're talking about communication on other levels of dimensions, like, for instance, spirit.
Well, this is a very interesting topic, because before I became a hypnotherapist, of course, just believing what I do believe in and having the experiences in the paranormal world, I've always been sure that there are other dimensions and other levels of being. When people go into hypnosis, you may ask that person to go to the very first time that they felt a certain thing, and they may pop into what appears to be a past life.
Like another life experience.
Another life experience. And in that experience, I would say for the most part, for sure, there is something that has played out in the mind that is directly connected to the challenge that they came in for in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So, are they in another lifetime? Well, whatever they are experiencing...
Are they connected to the highest part and crossing over to other experiences? We don't have a clue.
Yeah. And going in between lives. And I have had clients who have had experiences where, let's put a message started to come through from a guide that had been with them since the beginning of time.
Oh. So,
and
which
these are people who just really didn't have any particular religious belief.
No, and that sure surprises the daylights out of them, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Yeah, because I think, like, where did that come from?
Absolutely.
And then, you know, from that time on, once they've had an experience of that nature, then they've had it themselves, and there's nobody's going to tell them that it didn't happen.
No. And I mean, I believe that, of course, that our wisdom or our knowledge or beingness is eternal and to the ends of all universes. We do know everything.
Yeah, and I believe that. See, I believe that your spirit, Jeannie's spirit, it was there and it's now and it's still going to be there when you go back. And there is no time out there, so it's eternal.
Exactly. I
think I
believe
you
that
are connected, however, with a number of facets of other spirits that are connected into your whole soul.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have an experience that are going on. But then that might be only where my perception ends off. I may not even be able to conceive or even understand how great this is.
It's just fascinating, because the subconscious mind is like the entire universe, and within it are just the most amazing revelations that come through. And like I say, most clients that come to me are not really in any particular spiritual belief. They're there for a challenge that they're there to meet.
As a matter of fact, when I worked with I was trained under the Alpha Clinics in New Westminster, and Vancouver, and they were in Chilliwack and whatnot, and fairly well thought of. And the fellow that I trained under there told me if I came to work full-time for them, which I ended up not doing, he was going to give me the large office in Vancouver because he really liked the work that I did. He liked how I worked with the people. He also liked how I could go out and talk and lecture and whatnot. So he wanted me to work, but there was a thing that we had to stay within. The spiritual side was a personal thing to yourself. And even though I maybe use a little bit of my psychic ability to hone in where this person has a problem, it wasn't supposed to be their knowledge that that's what I was doing. And so I had a little bit of wrestling problem with whether I wanted to like stand back from what I was doing in the spiritual side or not. But I understand most of the people that come in are not coming in under a spiritual guise.
No. No, they're coming in with chronic pain and asthma and sleep disorders and stress and all sorts of things that are that our world is really manifesting through our bodies and our minds. And it's just wonderful to be able to not only help so quickly, but to give each one of those clients the ability to go home and find that way to find their own center and balance.
And now that's a good point to bring up, because they do go home and they do work on it from that point. We don't hold their hand and stay with them year after year after year after year. They come in and they get help with what they need, and then you're giving them the tools to help themselves.
Yes. And this, you know, hypnotherapy is, if they check on the statistics, they will find, and I'm not, there's many different ways that people find their healing, and I'm not sort of dissing some of them, but there are some things that you could go to year after year after year with the idea that if you visit this problem enough times, that you become kind of numbed to it. Well, it never
like
goes away.
Like having a fear of elevators, go on it enough time and you won't be fearful.
However, with hypnotherapy, you go to the very first time you had that problem, turn it around, and it's over.
That's true, because, you know, I had a young girl come in. I work a lot with agoraphobic because I am a recovered agoraphobic, so I totally understand where they're coming from. And this gal came in, and she'd been going to the psychiatrist, and she told him that she was going to come and get some therapy with me. And he said, well, good, I've heard she's okay and whatnot. And she came in, and we went through this one session. I informed her what I was going to do ahead of time. And in the process of this, I said, now you are standing here, safe and comfortable. And there are people off in the distance. You may invite one or more of them to join you. But at any time you choose to leave, you may leave. If you're uncomfortable, you may leave, and there will be no worry and no concern. So, I mean, I don't even know why I was directed to say that, other than it was coming through from a higher source than I'm working with. So afterwards, she talked to me, and she said, well, that's exactly what my problem is. She said, I get a panic attack. I'm in the grocery store. I want to get out of there. What happens? You're saying I can leave anytime. What happens if I leave the groceries and run out of the store? I said, you leave the groceries, they think maybe you've gone to the washroom. Maybe you forgot something in your car. They, most times, are not even paying any attention to you in the first place.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
She says. So I said, you basically can choose to either be or leave anytime you choose to. So when you have one of these panic attacks and you're walking through the store, you think to yourself, the first thing you say is, I can leave if I choose to. The next thought you have is, I will continue to go on until I feel so uncomfortable that I need to leave. And you will find that panic, you'll walk through the panic and you'll come back into the normal everyday level that you should be working. And the panic attack will go away and you'll be fine. Well, lo and behold, the next week she comes in. She said, my doctor was absolutely amazed. She said, I went grocery shopping. My husband stood outside, but I went in. And she said, I did shopping and then I came back out. And when I said to him, I went shopping this week. And he said, how could you do that? You haven't been able to, you know, venture on your own. And she said what I told her. He hit himself on the forehead and said, why didn't I think of that? It was, you know, it was just, I don't know, it came from something outside of myself, something that came from her, that I understood what her fear was. I don't know. But you know what? That was basically the key that turned the whole thing over. And she could then start going back into her everyday life without that that unreasonable fear that happens with panic attacks.
Hypnotherapy is amazing for phobias.
It is things
that people have been having phobias for 30 and 40 years in two sessions.
Yeah. And they say, well, why didn't I do this years ago?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, we don't want to claim that we can do that because we don't know how they're going to work with it, what their reaction is going to be. But I think you have an advantage, to be really truthful. As a hypnotherapist, I have the same advantage that we are in tune with the client.
Yes.
And so something in that tuning, whether you believe it's spirit workers or whether it's God source, whatever, that's bringing that information through, but it just is the right thing to say that clicks it over.
And it's the also when the client is there and walking through their own experience, I'm there with them. I know where they are.
Yeah, and they're not afraid because you tell them, first of all, I'm there. If there's anything uncomfortable, I'm going to move you back from it. You listen to me. I'm going to move you back from it. You are not in the experience. You are an observer. And so there, you know, and it's not like we have them in control. We're just suggesting where they go. They don't have to go there.
No,
they always have control.
I tell the clients, it's like they're driving the car and I'm reading the map.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to go from Vancouver to California, then I'm going to read the map and you steer the car.
Exactly.
And we're going to get there.
So they stay captain of their own ship.
You bet.
And that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so their choice is to be healthy. And again, that comes right back to the fact that they do have to choose to work with this. Because if they choose not to, they're resistant, and if it's serving them in some way and they're resistant to it, then obviously we can't do anything about it because we're not the ones doing it. They're the ones doing it.
Exactly. And we do spend a really good length of time with each client prior to any of the hypnotherapy sessions just to have that discussion of, are you ready to do this? How do you feel about this? And is there any fears or is there any questions? Because every question can be answered. And then, of course, it's free will after that. And usually people will say, okay, I'm in. Yeah. And knowing that they have full control.
And having the confidence in the therapist.
Yes.
When you were taking your training, you probably had the same thing in it as I did. And there was this one segment that said that a lot of the success of the hypnotherapy is dependent on the therapist believing what they're doing is going to work.
I think that is part of it. And as we learn, that the rapport that we have with the client is certainly a huge part of the process. Mm-hmm. But I think that the biggest part of that is when a person says, I think I'm going to put my mind into your hands. So mm-hmm. I want to make sure that you're here in my best interest. And then, of course, after they've had their first experience, they know that they're in complete control, and that doesn't even enter the mind any longer.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, it's too bad sometimes that, you know, that it's such a fearful thing. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you a little story. Because I had agoraphobia, basically agoraphobia gets to the point that you're fear of fear itself. And so one of my greatest fears, though, even when I wasn't suffering the agoraphobia, is flying. Oh, just absolutely petrified of flying. And so a couple times I've flown, and it has not been really comfortable flights, but I did fly. Well, we have a friend who is a pilot. He's now retired, but he used to run from here to Hong Kong and back. And I'm at dinner with them at their home, and I'm going to be doing a work down in Ontario. And I, you know, let's face it, when we're doing the work we're doing, you can't waste the time driving all the time. You've got to go from point A to point B. You're going to have to fly.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about I'm going to be flying down to Ontario, blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, how come you're so frightened of it? And I said, I don't know. I don't know if it's claustrophobia or, you know, what I'm afraid of. And he said, well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. We've never left anybody up there. Well, I will tell you, I laughed so hard I thought I was going to have to excuse myself. It just struck me so funny. Well, I get on the plane, and actually what it is more is a motion thing. And if I'm like on a ship, if I'm looking at the horizon and the ship can be moving, I'm fine. If I'm looking out the window of the plane and I'm looking straight out, I'm fine. But if I turn around and look at somebody, it's like motion sickness, right? But anyway, somebody said something, I turned away, and I got a little bit of a loop, and I thought, you know what? Pat said they never left anybody up here, and I started to laugh. And so anytime that I had any kind of discomfort, I just thought about Pat saying that they never left anybody up there and just laughed. Now, you would say to yourself, like, why would you think that was funny, and why would that comfort you?
There might be, as we, you know, I was talking earlier about the parts that are within us.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how sometimes we assume one thing and it turns out to be totally different. Most people who come in for fear of flying are not did not get that fear by flying.
No.
It was attached to...
Well, I had never flown when I was afraid of flying.
Right. And it's attached to other ideas or other circumstances, like one client who was knew that when he got on that plane, he was going to say goodbye to his dad forever.
Uh-oh.
And he didn't even remember that. He was such a little guy at the time. So the subconscious is sitting with all these really interesting mysteries that the logical mind, if it could have figured it out, it would have. It can't. It's the secretary. It's not the master or the boss. It looks
well,
after...
Well, you know something? You just given me an answer to what that was. Because the fact that he said we've never left anybody up there is a fact that I don't feel like I'm going to be abandoned.
There you are.
There you are. Now, here we are, on the air. You just solved the mystery. The reason that I feel that comforted in that is that he's not going to abandon me. So there's an abandonment issue that I dealt with when I was young.
And it's always interesting how certain things like that get revealed to us, that we would not logically tie one thing in with another because it just doesn't seem to connect, but it becomes everything, and it starts a ball rolling.
It's really something else. To think, you know, here I am 76 years old, and I'm sitting here talking to you, and we both have been knowing each other for a long time.
Yes.
And we both have done all these courses and worked with all these people. And I finally just keyed in to what the whole thing is. I'm afraid of being abandoned.
Well, isn't that interesting how the universe works, eh, Barb?
Wow. And I wouldn't have thought that I still had that fear in there that strong.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that just, but I guess that's why it struck me so funny, because come on, we're all going to go down together.
It ends up simply being a program that keeps running in the background.
How interesting is that? I don't know if anybody out there from the chapel is listening. And they're probably finding this very interesting, so that's why they're not phoning in. But if you want to phone in and have a chat with us, it's 1-888-815-9756. And I have Reverend Jeannie Martin on with me, and we're talking about hypnosis and all related subjects to do with the mind in the alpha state. So give us a call, or we'll just keep on chatting. But they don't want to hear us, they can turn us off. But I would think that there's a few people out there that I know that are good listeners. They listen every time that we're on. And they're probably really quite mesmerized by what you're talking about here, Jeannie.
Well, you know, it's empowering to know that there's an inner guidance within us that's far, far vaster than we could ever, ever imagine. We are so much more than we think. Oh, and that wisdom is there right now in this moment. And it just takes that slowing down and that going within and listening to that guidance and trusting it. It's not your imagination running wild. It's not fluff. No. It is true knowledge. And we all have it.
You know, one of the mentors that I worked with, he had a situation where he did hypnosis with this lady who had a tremendous amount of problems with her monthly period, and she would just be in agony, 3 or 4 days off work each month. And also, she'd been attempting for quite a while to become pregnant. And he did a session with her, and she slipped into other life experience. Now, he has always called it that, and when I heard him call that, I thought that is a good idea to talk about. So when she slipped into this, it was as if she was observing a woman in childbirth having a difficult childbirth, birthing the child, and dying in the childbirth. Well, she came back out of that. Now, he didn't try to identify what that might have been or whatever. He just said, this is not of your reality now. And worked with her, and within a few months, she was going through without any difficulty, and within in their monthly period. And in the few months, she became pregnant and had a lovely baby.
Wonderful.
So interesting how there, as you say, there are some facets that we're tuning into, whether they're experiences that we're crossing over to or what, you know, whatever. That seemed to link in. She linked in a fear somehow there and pulled that thought in. And then the other thing with this, and now this you will find interesting, is that we're talking about time not being relevant. And so he also worked with people doing projection 100 or 2 years hence.
Yes.
And they would come up with similar stories of what they were seeing at that time. So
yes.
What he was saying then, if you can regress, you can progress.
Yes, and you can. And we cover that also in the course. When you take the course at the school, you will learn all of the facets of hypnosis, which is such a fascinating study.
Yeah.
And part of it is looking into the future. In fact, in its own way, part of the therapy deals with that. I'll give you a quick example on that. When somebody has a phobia, and then the phobia is reframed, and then you bring the person back into the last time they had the phobia, then you take them into the future, where they will meet that spider again or that whatever again in the future. And then you know it's clear when there's no reaction.
So when their heart rate and everything else doesn't go like wacko wacko.
Yeah, and they're not. I mean, they're interacting through the therapy. They're actually speaking, and they have no reaction to it. It's been transformed and reprogrammed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now here's another thing that we should maybe talk about is that just like in meditation, you can have a meditation and go into a relaxation and feel like you're on the beach in Hawaii and go for a walk and feel like you've basically been there. And your body believes that it has because it takes a refreshment. It feels like it's had a good night's sleep and whatever. And the same thing happens in hypnotherapy, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
The body will believe what the subconscious mind tells it. The body will respond to what it believes to be true.
Yeah, and, you know, our conscious mind is chattering all the time, and when we're having a thought, it is going into our neurology and ending up in a part of the body. So every time we think, we've got a body reaction to it. When you allow the conscious mind to drift and just stand aside, that body gets such a rest because it's not got that chatter running through it that it has to react to. So it has the most delicious rest it has ever had. And I always tell clients, when you've finished just even this first session, your body's going to love you. And 100% of the time I'm right. Because it does, they just feel like $1 million.
Well, it's funny, you know, because I, for the first time, I think it was in November, I went for pedicure. And I came out of there, my feet felt 10 years younger.
There you
go. My feet wanted to run, you know. And I think this is what happens to the whole body when you do a hypnotherapy or you do a deep meditation, and that you use positive images in there, because the body basically believes that it's experiencing that. And
absolutely.
So therefore, all the chemistries in the body react to that pleasant situation. Same thing happens in fear, though, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And when we're dealing with the subconscious mind, which again is the master, it doesn't know, it doesn't think in terms of past or future, or it doesn't judge. So when you have a communication directly with the master, its only objective in life is to serve and protect you in any way that it can. Even if it keeps you away from things in the form of perhaps a phobia, it thinks it's protecting you. So when you speak directly to it, it does not know the difference between it happening right now or 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why change can happen.
At supper about grief.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that as much as grief is something, if you lose somebody, you lose them. And there is no such a thing as when is it over, it's go over. There is no over.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to come through that grief and be able to be productive and be able to have a life again and not feel guilty and go through all the stages and be able to be have a life and not be concerned with, oh my God, how much I lost, really takes a fact of being able to say that the person's fine, that we have to realize that they're fine and go on and honor them. So at the moment that we change our thinking from, oh, well, I have to be wearing rags and be crying all the time, to I want to honor that person by being the very best and doing the very best with my life that I can, it changes the whole dynamic of the grieving system.
Yes, it does. And at the same time, as you know, it's a process. And
yeah.
People in grief, if you can, just as you said, Barb, get the mind to really understand the truth of the matter is that spirit is carrying on. And this connection isn't broken eternally. There will be a connection. To allow yourself to go through the grieving process. I know some people right now that think they better hurry up and get over it.
You can't.
And that in, as also is a very big strain when there's an adjustment to be made, for sure.
And when they have to answer to people who say, oh, you should be over it now.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Because there's no book that says when you're going to be over it.
No.
But the best way to, it's much the same thing as with a child. When they fall down and they hurt themselves, or they're playing with a playmate, and the playmates all run off and leave them stranded, they'll come in crying and sucking their thumb, and they'll lay in the bed all balled up, and they'll internalize that pain. Now, the best thing that mom does, or dad, is to say, come on, sweetie, you can come and help mommy or daddy bake some cookies, or I'll take you down for an ice cream cone down, and distract them from living in that pain. Now, it doesn't mean the pain wasn't there. It means let's distract them and get their focus on something that's going to be more pleasurable. Where can they focus to help them come through that, come out the other side, and see that there's a rainbow there, even though they're always going to miss that person?
Yes.
And that is a really, I think, where hypnotherapy, like where concept therapy or whatever the case may be, where you can do your best work with people in grief. The other thing is that if they're going to stay in it, whatever it is, maybe it's a loss of money, maybe it's a loss of a job that seemed to be unfair, whatever, if you're going to stay in that and every morning you're going to get up and think, oh, you know, if it wasn't for that rotten so-and-so in my office, I would have the manager's job, right? You're going to do that every morning. Your system thinks you went through that again.
Absolutely. Every time.
So, you know, that's why you need to distract yourself from living in that pain and just embracing the pain. You have to embrace something that is going to lead you from that pain.
Yes, and running the movie over and over and over in the head is very destructive. If it's bringing back that pain because the subconscious does not know that it's not happening right now.
No, it doesn't. That's what is just so devastating, is that when somebody goes through that every morning, they wake up with that thought in there that's so negative and is so overpowering, that the whole system thinks, oh, here we go again.
And not only that, the body reacts with disease. It starts breaking the body down.
Yeah.
Because,
and
like I said earlier, that every thought hits a place in the neurology.
Yeah. And that's where the dis-ease comes from. The body's at dis-ease, and the disease comes from that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Not that, you know, sometimes we aren't, you know, genetically predisposed to something. But now here's another thing. Being genetically predisposed, I come from a family that had basically utero and ovarian cancer as something that was in the line from my grandmother. All my mother's sisters and she all had hysterectomies by the time they're 35. One of my first cousins died at 21 years old with cancer of the uterus, and they didn't discover it until she was in the middle part of a pregnancy. And all of, so, you know, you could take a look at that and say, oh my God, I'm predisposed to cancer. But yet, on the other side of that, by using what I knew when I had precancer cells in the uterus, I worked with that, cleared itself, and I still have all my women's parts.
Mm-hmm.
So, not that I would say that would the route somebody else should take, but I have a problem with anesthetics. So, my liver doesn't like it, so it would be better if I could get cell healing and get the right things working in there so the body would go down and do the work instead of embracing, oh my God, I've got cancer and I'm going to definitely have it because my mother had it, my grandmother had it, my aunts had it, my cousin had it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's where we really run into problem, where we embrace and pound like a big snowball. They keep rolling it more of the same snow till it becomes so big it's like an avalanche.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it builds up over time. If anybody cares to look up Bruce Lipton and the man who actually studied the cell of our body and find out just how our mind is what puts it together. Yes, we can be genetically disposed to certain things, but that doesn't mean they're going to show up.
Yeah,
but
are we
off now? We can make them show up. We can make them show up.
Going to have to say goodbye, Jeannie, because we've had a great night. I'm just looking at the time here. I think Dawn's telling us we're on our way.
Okay, so thank you so much, Barbara.
And thanks, everybody, for listening in, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Jeannie.